Welcome to Have You Heard, where we talk about issues at the intersection of agriculture and engineering. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Morgan Hayes and Josh Jackson.
Welcome. This is the Have You Heard podcast. This is episode 68. We're going to talk today about cattle handling facilities inside older tobacco barns. I'm Morgan Hayes, an assistant professor in biosystems and ag engineering at the University of Kentucky, focusing on livestock facilities. And in my personal life, I farm in Boyle County, Kentucky, with my husband, a commercial cattle and hay operation.
I'm Josh Jackson, assistant professor in biosystems and agriculture engineering as well, where I focus on precision livestock farming. And in my personal life, we raise registered Angus cattle, some goats, and we also focus on some hay production.
And Josh, before we get into our topic for today, we're actually at the Harold R. Benson Research and Demonstration Farm here at Kentucky State University, where we're going to do our talk about cattle handling in older tobacco barns this evening, and a timely topic then for us for the day as well. But before we do that, what's been happening on your farm?
Still got a lot of hay to move. So it's one of those things, we have hay to move. We're trying to clear out some trees, getting ready for wintertime. So we're just in that method of thinking where we have to pretty much get our wood. If we're going to get wood, got to do it now.
We're right now, we're cleaning up fence lines where we put in new fence this summer. So we had trees that went down, cleaning up all of that. And then a little bit more fencing that's getting done this week. So the neighbor's actually clearing the line so that we can fence later in the week. So that's when we get to what's happening in the next week. What's our goal? A fence going back up is a goal, because currently there's no fence there. We're currently clearing out that area. On top of that, we're feeding hay in a number of spots. That's happened in the last week. We have gotten to the point where we need a number of groups hay, which is not ideal at this point in the year, but I mean, it's been very dry, so this is not a surprise. And other than that, we have one cow left to calve.
Oh,
just awesome. One. But, you know, she's probably going to hold out as long as she can, and we're just going to keep checking her twice a day.
Yeah, I forgot to say, we did send about 7 cows off to a registered Angus sale.
Oh, did you?
So
okay.
So they're going off today, and they're actually, I guess, going off today or tomorrow, and then they'll be there for this weekend to sell. Then
okay.
The other thing we're doing is also, it's that time of year, we're putting down some lime. So I'm not putting down lime, but we've hired for lime to be put down.
And we are actually spreading manure. We did a little bit yesterday. We'll do a little bit more maybe end of the weekend. It depends on the fencing, because equipment's either tied up to... to fencing equipment, yep. Or it's going to be tied up in spreading. So one or the other will be happening, depending on how efficient we are getting the rest of that fence line cleared out.
Okay. And I guess it just depends on how long a fence line do you have to do?
It's not actually a huge length. We did the majority of this fence line. We did about 800 feet. We've got about 300 more feet in one field.
Nothing.
It's a very short distance, and actually we actually have the brace and corner up at the top of the hill. So we need one brace and corner at the bottom of the hill, and then a couple posts driven in. But we need it there because it is our winter lot.
Oh.
So it's critical that we get the rest of this fence line done before we bring these animals back. This is one of the farms that does have, we've been rotationally grazing and a little bit understocked. So that's the one that still has some grass on it. So we'll get that done, but it's important, because when they leave in the middle of winter, it's really a problem.
This takes top priority.
It is top priority. So we'll get this fence done in the next week and a half. Good. Aside from that, our topic today, we're gonna actually talk about cattle handling, and there's gonna be a demonstration. It's a shoot side, what's known as a shoot side BQCA training, which is a training program that is done by the Cattlemen's Group. It is a nationalized program to ensure that people do proper vaccinations, that they vaccinate safely for both themselves and for the animals, reduces lesions and improper needle use. You know, one of the big pushes that actually caused the start of the BQ, what was BQA and now is BQCA training, beef quality assurance, beef quality care and assurance. Excuse us while we make sure we get all those words in there in the right order. One of the real initial pushes for it was because a lot of packers were really concerned about potentially getting a needle into a meat product, which is a very big issue if it does happen. There's a lot of ways that they, at the processors, that they check and recheck to make sure that we don't end up with needles in food, getting into the food supply. But one of the things they didn't want was needles broken off in animals for a couple of reasons. One, it's not good for the animal, but it's also extremely dangerous if it makes it into the supply. And so proper training avoids the needles breaking in the animal, but it also will avoid lesions and scar tissue, things that make that reduce the quality of beef products that are coming out of the U.S. And most states use BQCA or BQA training as a requirement to certain cost share programs. And for us here in this state, that for our CATE programming, anything that has to do with large animal also requires a BQCA training as part of your requirements in order to get that CATE dollar match.
And, you know, part of the problem had been they would also putting those injections in high dollar cuts.
Correct. That's true. They were doing a lot of injections in the rear end of the animal because there's a lot of large muscle there, making it a very effective spot to give a vaccination or an injection.
Easy to get to, but not quite the desired spot.
So now we do everything. The goal is in front of the shoulder blade because that is, there's some muscle there, but not muscles that we would typically use as a higher dollar cut. And it's a little bit easier to remove if there is any
abscesses
or poor tissue. That's a spot that a much lower value portion of the animal.
Yep, and that's traditionally, that'd also been an area where you'd probably also do like a roast or something where it might be a longer, high moisture cut that you would hopefully cook longer with that high moisture to ameliorate issues with toughness.
Yep. So for any number of reasons, the spot where we now target in front of that shoulder blade. But if we're going to give our injections in front of the shoulder blade, one of the things that's really important is that we get a good, not only a head catch, but a good squeeze shoot too.
Yes.
Squeeze shoot's really important for two reasons. One, it contains the animal and lowers stress on them during this process. But two, it also provides a much safer option for us in our hands, so that we don't crush fingers or accidentally poke ourselves in the process of giving some sort of an injection to a cow. We're going to be today in what was an old tobacco barn, though. And tobacco barns are one of those areas where we get a lot of questions in this state, in particular about trying to retrofit a working facility under roof. And there's a couple reasons for that. But I personally think tobacco barns, maybe not the best option for storing hay, maybe not the best option for feeding out animals long term, because there's a lot of posts, a buildup of manure, things like that is really problematic. And taking out posts in a tobacco barn is a fairly risky venture, not one that we recommend, because it's part of the structure.
Yeah.
It's not a facility that has some sort of diaphragm design. It's just got a lot of posts that interact with other posts, and they're all there, and it's a very heavy structure. Those tobacco barns.
Definitely want to make sure to say, don't touch any diagonal beams.
Yeah, no diagonal beams. And to be honest, not a lot of horizontal beams should really be removed either, but a lot of them get, and not just tier rails, but actually horizontal beams that are not tier rails get removed too. All of that's kind of problematic, the way that structure holds together. So, in general, I think tobacco barns are really a tricky structure to retrofit. But this is one area where I think people are fairly successful in retrofitting them, is putting a handling facility into them.
And really, for the tobacco barn to work for a handling facility, you almost need at least a 40 by 60 barn.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't recommend a small, really small tobacco barn, but most tobacco barns have at least three bents in them, minimum of 12 foot each, but usually the central bent being the opening. That you would be able to drive a wagon through. Usually they're about 12 foot wide, but the central one a lot of times is 14 or 16 wide, just because that's usually how the tractor pulls through, and that's where they want a little bit more space. And as a result, those barns tend to be about 40 foot wide.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are three bent plus some sheds on the side, and sometimes we can get four or five, six bent wide barns. So we have some real opportunities with Wise to have.
And even like lengthwise, if you get the 40 by 90, if it's a 40 by 96 barn, you can do a lot in that barn. And maybe still not even, you can set your facility to one side or another, maybe not even really block your center aisle for if you still want to move tobacco wagons. Because there are still some farms across the state that still have tobacco.
Sure. And even if people aren't don't have tobacco, a lot of them still have the wagons that they like, that they'd like, because they have a wood base. Their frame is metal, but the base that you stand on is a lot of times wood, although there are some metal ones as well.
Yep.
But those wood ones in particular are pretty susceptible to being left out in the weather. So a lot of people will try and pull them in to the barns in the wintertime. So having a access alley that you can pull through can be really useful. And that is doable, especially on like a 4-bent wide, 90-foot long barn.
Oh, yeah.
We can definitely set up one of those barns to really function.
Cattle.
To move some cattle around. So I personally have an old tobacco barn. We've actually recorded some video out there on one of our operations, and it's we've used 1, 2, 3 bents for the facility, plus the back of the 4th bent we use at a bud box. So we use that back 12 feet on the barn, but it's a 96-foot long barn. So in front of that bud box, we have storage for hay. So no drive-through alley for us, but we do actually have space that we can utilize for hay storage on top of the space that we have available for working the cattle.
Then you also use it for loadout as well.
Yep, so and it's a perfect loadout for us.
I can't remember if it's a 10-foot wide or is it 12-foot wide alley.
We have a 12-foot wide alley that we use to load out. And what's really nice about the facility, and this is not unusual with tobacco barns, is a lot of times they're up on the top of a hill for ventilation purposes.
Yep.
We graveled the inside of that barn before we put in our working facility, put in our corral panels. And it actually means that we've got elevation there. So when we back up, there's actually no step. So when we push out cows, it's not usually a huge problem that we use a trailer. You know, in other spots, we have an 18-inch or 24-inch step up that the cows have to make. For young calves, that can be challenging. For weaning calves, this facility, I would say, if they have 6 inches that they have to step up the way we back into the front of that barn, it would be as much as we ever see them have to make. Much easier to load out of this barn because we have put that gravel base down in the barn. I mean, we've graveled outside of the barn, but the ground naturally slopes away on the outside of the tobacco barns. And that's not unusual in a lot of spots to have ground sort of slope away and allow for water to flow away from the barn to keep it dry on.
Oh, like we have a slightly different design. So we have a funnel in our tobacco barn. So we have, and it's different because we have them coming down our center alley, but we still pull our hay wagons through that center lane.
Mm.
And so there's no, on our sides or the sides of the bent, we just have access into in and out of the barn through that center lane. And so that was something we had to be cognizant of. So we can take down gates whenever we need to, or swing gates whenever we actually need to pull hay wagons, load up in a loft. But we have it such that in each of the probably 2 bins, so one part is a center alley, and the other sections we have 2 areas in which we can actually capture the cattle after we run them in, and then we put them into a funnel, then run them down one of the sides so that we can work them.
Yeah, and I think to me one of the things that I like to think about when I think about the tobacco barns is that typical width is about 12 foot wide.
Yep.
And the length between posts is about 12 foot. So we have sort of 12 by 12 squares, sometimes 12 by 14 or 12 by 16 in that central alleyway or bent of the barn. And what we end up with is very easy spaces to fit things like panels, corral panels. We don't often, if the barn is structurally sound, we have posts at a regular enough spacing that we can kind of reinforce some sort of corral system and not have to put a lot of posts into the ground inside that barn. They tend to ventilate well, so they don't tend to get super hot. Things that are challenging is they don't always have electricity. Ones that had stripping rooms on them, though, often do have electricity at them.
Yep.
And we would like to have water nearby. That's also something that is very questionable at a tobacco barn. But if I was looking at a barn to decide if I wanted to use it, the first thing I would look at is all those posts and see how many of them are somehow attached to the ground or at least sitting on some sort of concrete stob so that that base is in good shape. What I don't want to see is a lot where you can see that the roof line is sagging down 3 or 4 feet because the post has broken down and is and the bottom of the post is worn away. And that, because that structurally, that starts to get tricky, because then that post might be sitting really nice and heavy on the ground. It might be hard to pick it up, but the next one over then might be a little bit wobbly because everything is not squared up the way it's supposed to be. So if I'm looking at a barn like this and making a decision about retrofitting, the first thing I want to do is look at all those posts and see how good of shape they are in.
And one thing we had recommended to a producer, it's been way back in Mason County, was they had some of the original rock in there.
Yep.
And so we had recommended them that they go ahead and replace that with a concrete.
Yeah, and we've done it at a couple operations where we've suggested they put in like what we would use like a concrete tube to put underneath a post if we were doing a new build. We can use that same thing on an existing structure and really gain some value out of it.
And get some really good functionality, because that's the other thing, you know, a little bit concerned about if the animals, if they are pushing, if you, you know, really, and we try to avoid packing a whole bunch in there. So we want to have an adequate number, but of spacing. So we still have the 20 square foot per animal, but not really pushing them in there too hard in the tobacco barn, because we don't want to push it against the sides.
Exactly. Yep. That's the last thing we want to do, is to overload the facility. And tobacco barns are perfect because we have a lot of square footage, so we actually can get some holding and sorting pens.
Yep.
These designs are really nice as well, because if it's a 96 foot long, I can add a couple gates inside a 96 by 12 foot space, and I can actually sort in that alleyway itself and, you know, just push up, you know, the first group of 10 or 15 animals and push a couple calves back, work my cows, then push up a few more cows. And then, but I can, with a couple of gates in that long single file, not single file, but the single bent of the barn, I can actually usually push in 20 or 25 head and sort them within that one space, which is great. Because I use a bud box, the bud box is really nice for these designs, because a bud box in theory about 10 foot wide and about 20 foot long. In this case, it's probably closer to 24 foot long and maybe 12 foot wide. But by the time I put my panels inside of the posts, I'm, you know, I'm 10 or 11 feet. It's definitely a manageable size for me to work by myself on foot. And that bud box, although I normally want to come in file alley, if I need to use them to help me sort on top of that other alley, I can like push some calves into there and push some cows back and work my ground that way. And so that works extremely well. The facility we're going to today has a big alley that actually turns a corner and comes back. And then they have a gate that they push into before they run a tub. Now, these tubs are really interesting because tubs are a little trickier sometimes to fit into these barns.
Yes.
Because a lot of times people will say, oh, I have a 12-foot alley, so I can put a 12-foot tub in. And that does not ever fit.
Nope.
But a lot of times a 10-foot tub fits nicely inside a 12-foot wide alley.
Yes.
But you really want to be careful and check the measurements on a commercially available tub or sweep to make sure it's actually going to fit in the dimensions that you have by the time those posts are where they are, because you're not moving the post in the tobacco barn. So you are sort of committed to the opening that is there. And so sometimes I've even seen people have to go down to an 8.
Yeah.
And they might have a 12, but by the time the posts are where they're at, they end up with an 8-foot tub. And that's not a problem. It's just something to be aware of.
And, you know, it's also be cognizant of. So some of the barns, they're really good about, you know, 12 foot on centers, but there are some barns where, tobacco barns, where maybe it was built by a producer or I'm not sure what, but if their 12 foot centers were not
standardized. 12 foot.
They're not standardized.
I think that's fair. And I think that a lot of times also has to do with how they were cutting wood, and they'd cut a piece of wood and then they'd cut the other piece of wood to match. And then they'd find tier rails that fit that spacing. So sometimes that 12 foot is 12.6, and sometimes that 12 foot is 11.4. And both of those are within reason of 12 foot, I think, for the producer who was building that barn. But it is something to kind of be aware of.
So, you know, definitely before we put anything in there, and that's sometimes what we try to check when we're there, is just take measurements. What is the actual spacing? So then we might measure the overall length of the barn, get the approximation, but make sure, double check and make sure.
Yep, I think that's a fair point.
And so I think there's been, like you said, there's been a couple of facilities where we had to go to an 8-foot just because of the spacing.
Yep, it seems like you think it's a 12-foot wide, so a 10 will certainly fit. But occasionally, it really doesn't fit well. Or we'll be up against like a old swinging gate or something like that, and then the post will be offset. Or so there'd be a couple different reasons that we have some challenges with design.
And then, you know, for putting a tub in there, sometimes a 90-degree tub can sometimes work well if we're doing our 90 or 180-degree tub, depending on how much space we have.
Yeah.
Or if we have that center alley that we're trying to utilize, still park equipment in that center alley, then we use the one side for our tub, either a 180-degree or 90-degree tub.
Yep.
And then we have to just be cognizant that we have to work animals just in batches.
Yep, exactly.
We just have to work batches of animals.
Yeah, I think that's a key to most handling facilities, but in particular when we move inside a barn is that, you know, we're not trying to take down these wood walls that are almost historic in nature by pushing animals at such a stress level that they run through them. That's not our goal. So definitely we only want to pressure them at the level we need to get them where we need them to go. We don't want any additional stress on them if we can avoid.
And another thing is, like, there's been a couple barns where, you know, for one issue or another, I've eventually told the producer, you know, it's probably wouldn't be ideal. At some point, we have to be, it is a good structure, but sometimes we can't always use it.
Especially if you get one of those ones that's a little under 40 foot wide, depending on what their animal numbers are, sometimes we get into trouble fitting into, say, a barn that's, you know, 32 or maybe even 36 foot wide.
And in those situations, you tell the producers, well, maybe we can do a lean-to structure or yeah. something adjacent to the barn to make it work. You know, then we think about making sure we have gutters and rock if needed. And then also thinking, you know, we put everything parallel to the barn. You still want to be in that location. You know, siding is going to be important. There's some tobacco barns that, you know, weren't built in on the hill.
Right.
Some that were built in the valley. And so we had to really think about, okay, and I know the barn is here. Is this really the best place to work? Sure. Maybe it's not centralized.
Right.
And so just, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what siding is going to be important still for our facility. And so maybe just because we have the barn doesn't necessarily mean it's the best option.
Yep. It's always something to keep in mind. And tobacco barns sort of are one of those structures that people want to utilize because they like having them on the farm, but they also don't want to spend a lot of money because those barns are old. So there's a balancing act. About how much work it's going to take to retrofit versus how much benefit are we going to get. But for people that are buying like brand new squeeze chutes.
Oh, yes.
There's, yeah. I mean, the lifespan that we might improve by putting them on the roof is not to be discounted.
Yeah, they almost double just because it's some of those facilities. You get the rain, you get the manure mm-hmm. on that chute. And so, you know, that moisture manure intersection can really destroy a lot of equipment. So.
I was in an old barn, not a tobacco barn, but an old barn about 2 weeks ago, doing a talk, and the barn had 35 tub sweep in it and single file alley. It was actually a double down to a single file alley, and all of that still had green paint in it.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it was still painted. Like, it looked like, I mean, it didn't look brand new, but it looked like a facility that if it was outside, I would have assumed was less than 10 years old, and instead it was 35. So definitely value in getting some of this more expensive equipment that you're purchasing under roof that use the tobacco barn or put a shed onto another structure.
Yep.
Or, you know, maybe even look at other less expensive structures, hoop barns or things like that. But I think if you have a tobacco barn and it's in the right location, it's certainly worth investigating.
They're certainly worth considering because, you know, building new structures does take additional time, investment, obviously money.
So sure.
You're already spending, I'd rather put that investment into a good facility and potentially put in that barn.
Right.
You know, something to think about and make sure, you know, because at the end of the day, it does come down to economics.
Yep,
some degree.
Absolutely.
But there are certain things we just can't, when we have a handling facility, we just can't sacrifice. It's a balance between safety, economics, and we can't oversimplify.
Yeah, we can't oversimplify and we don't want to overcomplicate.
Yes. Yeah.
We got to find that middle ground there.
It has to be easy enough for the cows to eat.
That's right. And me. The cows and Morgan, those are the two most challenged persons in the working facility. Okay. Okay, with Josh, we're going to leave it at that for right now, and we'll come back next week with another episode. But before we go, why don't you give us your goals for this week? I know you're going to sell some, make some good money on these Angus.
So send them and mom off to the sale to watch them. We'll probably, you know, we need to still move manure. So our goal is at some point to move manure, but we had just everybody and equipment going all here and there and everywhere. So try to pretty much get our stuff together, spread manure, and then at some point we have to start thinking about even potential for synchronization of cattle here upcoming in November.
Yeah, you're probably at the point now where if you don't have the right meds, this is the time to order them.
This is the time to order.
Yep, and really make sure you identify which bull semen is going with which cow and really do all your due diligence.
So yeah,
I have only bulls, so I just have to hope that the bulls do their job when they go out.
So yeah, we have to make sure we have all of our supplies pretty much ready to go so we can have it beginning of November and have it ready to go for, I think, first rounds of heifers early November, and then second round around Thanksgiving is pretty much, or Black Friday is cows typically.
For us, we're sort of, because we use the bulls, we're not under that pressure, but we haven't done pregnancy check on our spring group yet. So we actually have travel coming up, but we're getting ready to decide if we're going to wean before we go on our trip or after, probably most likely after, but sort of getting ready for that, for the shots, the rounds of shots that happen, pregnancy checking those cows. Now calves are coming. Lots of things to go on. Cow calf groups. In the meantime, this week is all about prep for on the following week. So making sure hay is out, making sure we know how much hay we have to put up, all of the things to travel, work. Next week we'll have another episode, and then the following week we'll have a very exciting episode from the road because I will be traveling extension counterpart up in Maine.
I guess, what about your fencing?
Oh gosh, I hope that fence is up before I leave town. If it is not up before I leave town, we're in big trouble. No, that fence has to be up because that's where those cows will be while we're gone. They will be in there and there will be hay on the concrete pad for them to eat. So,
all right.
So they better buck up and get those trees cut or I'll be cut.
Okay.
And it won't be pretty. So.
Got to watch some of those ashes when you cut. If the ash tree is still up there, you got to watch them when you
cut
them.
It's mainly some cedars. It's a pretty, the ash trees have already come down. Most of the fences come down. It's just a couple things left to take out of there.
All right. So
the session at its best right there. Okay, that's it for today. We will be back with another episode next week, and we will see you guys then.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Have You Heard is a production of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food and Environment, along with the Department of Biosystems and Agricultural Engineering. Discover what's wildly possible at ca.uky.edu.